Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Welcome to the MMA Fan Podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you Stu and Blake.
Hello and welcome to the MMA Fan Podcast. I'm Blake Harrison, and joining me today through the mystical, magical waves of the internet, which are created by tiny little elves that float around in space, is...
I'm Stu Whiffin. This is the third take of trying to do this little intro. Every time we've done it, you've added more on and you've gone more wizardy goblin-y as you've done it as well.
Yeah, I think moron is the correct phrase there, yeah. But welcome to the show, everyone. Today we have a fantastic guest for you. We have Angela Overkill Hill, who was just so wonderful, super nice, charismatic as well, and she's just such a phenomenal athlete in the cage as well. We were very, very lucky to get her on the show.
Oh, she was absolutely delightful. And before we get on with that interview, what I want to say is as well, if this is your first time listening to the podcast, then once you get to the end of this episode with Angela, then go and check out the back catalogue, because I think by the time this one comes out, you'll be able to listen to episodes with Molly McCann, Arnold Allen, Jack Shaw, Jojo Calderwood, a little known fighter called Alexander Volkanovski. Loads and loads. And they're just the fighters. If you like your kind of TV sort of celebrity types, we've got interviews with them as well, doing the fight or flight feature. There's a whole load of stuff in the back catalogue that you can get stuck into. But don't go there yet, because what we've got coming up is amazing today.
Yes, it is. We've got Angela Hill, as we said. And before we go on to that, we want to tell you about our lovely, lovely sponsors, Free Train, who have made these fantastic vests for you to go running in, to do your training in, to hit the bag in. It's a vest that you can stick your phone in. It keeps it close to your chest. You can just open up this little pocket, easy access to your phone, couple of pockets and stuff for your keys and all of that. No more do you need to have your phone rumbling around in your pocket as you run, or at a weird angle on your arm using one of those weird strap things. Free Train vest is exactly what you need if you're someone that keeps fit, goes running, hits the bag, any of that stuff. They are brilliant. And if you use the code MMAFAN on the Free Train website, which is www.freetrain.com, then you will get a cool 10% off. So there you go, you lucky things.
Don't say we don't spoil you.
That's it. The code is MMAFAN, and you can use that at freetrain.com to get your vests and keep listening to our podcasts while you run and hit the bag. It's perfect. It comes full circle.
Absolutely. And if we've not spoiled you enough, then, well, we're about to. Please enjoy today's episode with the wonderful Angela Hill.
Hey. How's it going?
Good. How are you guys?
Yeah, well, all right. Well,
really
all right.
Good, thanks.
How are you? Cool. You good?
I'm good, yeah.
Excellent.
What time is it over there?
It's 10, so it's not too early. It's Sunday, I usually sleep in on Sundays as my rest day, but yeah, it's not too early.
Nice. Oh, good. So today's not a gym day. Today's just a nice rest day for you.
Yeah, I get to chill all day, play with my dog and my husband a little bit, you know.
Nice. Because you're a big gamer as well, aren't you? You play a lot of computer games and stuff.
I do, but you know what? I haven't recently after, like, I'm one of those people who got a dog during quarantine. And so, like, he's kind of, like, taking up all my time. Like, I'm just, like, trying to make sure he's not, like, shitting on the floor and, you know, like, taking him to dog parks and stuff. So that's been really fun. So I actually haven't really been gaming that much since I got the dog. So
that welcome to my world. My dog is two children, but, yeah. You know, it's the same principle. They get in the way of that gaming. They really do.
Yeah, they look at you with those eyes and they, like, go... You know, you're just like, fuck, okay, let's go play, you know.
We're really thrilled that we're getting to have a chat with you today. Angela, we always like to start the conversations off by just kind of going back to the more formative years and just asking how you got into mixed martial arts.
So it's kind of a lame story. I started training with my husband. We just gotten married and we were playing video games, eating pizza every day. We both had jobs where we were just sitting down all day. Like I was working in an animation studio and he was working at an art gallery. So we were just kind of sitting on our ass all day. And then eventually I was like, yeah, you know, I want to learn how to defend myself. I think it would be a fun way to get it back in shape. And my husband was down too. And we went to our first Muay Thai class and just fell in love with it. Like the first time I threw an elbow on the pads, I was just like, oh my God, I am so powerful. And I was like super skinny back then. Like now I have like little muscles or whatever. But back then I was rake thin. Like my arms were really skinny, like Angelina Jolie's. And when I started throwing punches and kicks at things, I just felt really powerful all of a sudden, like first time in my life. So that was the thing that sparked the interest. And at that point, I had no interest in fighting other people. I just liked the fact that I was getting stronger and getting in shape and I look good in a bikini, you know. But then eventually my coach asked me if I wanted to fight. And I was like, well, if you think I'm good enough. And he's like, well, we'll see. You know, so we'll see. You either get messed up or, you know, you do great. And luckily I did really well. I fought, I did this tournament where you go and you have a bunch of fights in one day. And I ended up winning two fights that night. And from then on, I just kept fighting. And I kept having Muay Thai fights and kept winning. And I got a few knockouts. And around the time that I was, I guess, wondering what the next step was going to be, that's when the UFC announced that they were bringing in strawweights, which was like 5 pounds heavier than what I was fighting at. And they were like, okay, we're going to bring in the 115-pound weight class and we're going to do it through a season of tough. And I was like, oh, well, maybe I'll go try out and make some connections and show face and they'll see me for later after I have a few more fights. And then I ended up getting on the show. So that's kind of how my career started in MMA.
I mean, I've got so many questions on that alone. And so first of all, before we get on to getting into to tough, those first Muay Thai fights, I mean, you've now walked out into some of the biggest arenas in the world to fight at the highest level. And I can't imagine, and I'm sure we'll get around to asking you about the pressure that comes with that. But how was you with them early Muay Thai fights, knowing that this wasn't pads, this wasn't sparring with your friends, this was someone that was, you know, theoretically trying to take your head off and you was meant to be doing the same. You know, had you ever growing up, was you comfortable with confrontation or was it something that was quite alien to you?
I hated confrontation. I still do. Like if there's a way for me to ease a situation, then that's the path that I take. So I never liked fighting or arguments or anything like that. And I don't know. I feel like that's one of the reasons why training to become a fighter was so fun for me, because it was just something totally, totally different from anything that I actually wanted to do in real life. So yeah, it was definitely interesting going in there and just being in a scrap and actually like trying to take the other person's head off. Because when you're in there, you're just doing all or nothing. Like, there's no holding back. There's no going easy on the other person because they're trying to murder you. So if they could murder you in the fight, they would, you know. Luckily, there's referees there to make sure that it doesn't go that far. But that's what you have to do to win. So one thing that my coach said to me before my first fight that really prepared me was that, you know, you have great technique, but when you get in there, all the technique's going to go out the window. The person with the best cardio is going to win the fight because this is your first fight. Like, you both suck. Like, basically, that's what he was telling me. Like, you both suck at this point of your careers. So just be the more in shape person and you'll win the fight. So I was running. I was sprinting as much as I could. I would go as hard as I could on the heavy bag, as hard as I could on pad work. And that prepared me well. So the fight looks, when I look at the fight now, I'm like, oh my God, like it looks like it's going half speed. We're both just like lactic acid and our muscles just going, But at the time I was really proud of myself because I was like, yeah, beat her ass. And you know, every fight that you have, you get better, you keep improving. And even like my first UFC fights, I look back at, you know, like the ones that I won and I'm like, oh, like I could have finished her there. I shouldn't have gotten taken down there and stuff like that. So it's funny looking back at how I approached fighting and looking back at like how I actually looked compared to what I thought I looked like.
Yeah.
At the time, like I thought I looked really cool, but yeah, fighting is just like such an odd thing to do, especially when it's planned out. Like if a fight pops off in the middle of a bar, then that's a lot more natural than saying, hey, I'm gonna go to this place and fight you in 3 weeks, and then you're just sitting there for three weeks like, oh God, you know. So yeah,
fighting. It was bad enough at school when someone said, I'm going to meet you outside in like 2 hours. Oh, sorry, that was nerve-wracking enough for me. I always ran the other way. But I'm not getting involved in this.
There you go. So that's like an experience everyone knows. Like just multiply that by weeks, you know?
Yeah.
Like that 30 minutes waiting for the bell to ring is so hard. It feels so long. And that's kind of how waiting for a fight feels like. But yeah, it was fun. Like I enjoyed it. My first fight, I enjoyed it and I kept doing it.
I'm still interested in the like the mindset change between like what you're saying, you're working in an animation studio, your husband's working in an art gallery.
Yeah.
Flash forward a few years and you're a professional fighter. I mean, I imagine you've got a very eclectic group of friends because like you must have like, if you had a barbecue, have you got like one group of people that are in like berets and pashminas and the other guys are like really jacked in like tank tops and stuff like how does that even work? It just seems like such a huge shift.
Yeah, it was a stupid huge shift. And it was fun when I was living in New York because then all my art friends were there and my Muay Thai friends. But when I moved to California, now it's mostly just MMA people that I hang out with. So I lost touch with my roots, unfortunately. it's just funny. Like one reason I do like social media is because I can stay in touch with all those people that I knew in my past lives, I like to call it. So like people who knew me in high school, where I was like super quiet and like just that shy girl that never talked to anyone. And then like people in art school who knew me is like kind of the same deal, but like they're like, oh yeah, she went and did animation. She had that cool project that we saw in their senior show. And then people who knew me from Muay Thai and now people who know me from MMA, because like the Muay Thai and the MMA community is kind of different too. Like Muay Thai, they're a little more, just full of themselves. they think they're like, yeah, I don't know, just like the creme de la creme of martial arts, Muay Thai people do. And then you have the MMA fighters who are a little more down to earth, a little more like brutish, but yeah, everyone kind of comes from these different areas like wrestling and MMA and boxing, and they all come together and then you get this good mix of people. But yeah, if you ever join a gym, just know you're not just going to be surrounded by jocks. Like, yeah. You join a martial arts gym, it's going to be mostly nerds, really. Like, yeah. Like a lot of
unless it's Muay Thai
nerds.
And then they're all going to be snobs or something.
Yeah, nerd snobs. There's a little bit of both. Yeah.
With that in mind, Angela, the multitude of disciplines that you just mentioned there, you said that, you know, you saw that there was, you know, trials or auditions, I don't know what they refer to it as, to get into TUF. Mm-hmm. And obviously you're competing at a high level of Muay Thai there, and you think, right, I want to have a bit of this. This looks good. Had you done BJJ? Had you wrestled? Had you done anything other than Muay Thai when you sort of went for this TUF gig?
Yeah, but not nearly enough. Like, okay. I felt a lot more confident in my takedown defense and my BJJ skills before I fought someone who was also one of, I guess, like a lot of girls in the gym who become the best chick in the gym. If you don't have other girls there who are at your level, then you just become kind of cocky. Yeah. And you think that you can beat everyone. Like, you're beating up the guys, you're beating up any girl who comes through. And then you think, oh, well, if I fight a girl, like, it'll definitely be easier than beating up the guys. But you're fighting a girl like that from different parts of the world. So if there was a little bit of humbling after my first couple of fights, my first couple of MMA fights, where I just realized, okay, I do have a lot to work on. And I've only hit the tip of the iceberg when it comes to even striking. Like, I thought I knew everything there was about striking, but there was a lot that I had to learn about just MMA striking, the fact that the gloves are smaller. So if you block like this, you're still going to get punched, you know, because the glove will like go right through the guard. Moving your footwork has to be a little different, so you're not getting taken down every 2 seconds. And then obviously with like wrestling and BJJ, there's a wealth of things that I didn't know yet. So I had been training a little bit with those things. And before I went to TUF, I did a really in-depth, just, I guess, MMA wrestling training with a coach in North Carolina before I went on TUF. So I had the basics, and I kind of knew what I had to do when it came to defending and going for my own takedowns. But it's like anything, you start to scratch the surface, but there's so much more that you have to learn. So even if you show good potential, it might not mean that I can go into a wrestling match with like Carlos Esparza and win. So like, that was kind of like what I learned on TUF, is that, okay, you got a lot to learn and you do have potential. And I was doing well against my teammates on the show, but it's something that you don't really see as a fan. But I was hanging with my teammates. I was like beating them in certain positions and beating them on the mats as well as like in the striking department. So I knew, even though I lost that first fight on TUF, I knew that my potential was there, and I'm hanging with people who have been fighting for years longer than me. So just keep working, keep improving, and I'll be there eventually.
So the fact that you did unfortunately lose your first fight against Carla Esparza, who went on to win the whole thing. So yeah, it wasn't too bad in hindsight.
Yeah.
But the fact that that happened, and then you were then, I suppose, you didn't have a fight to necessarily look forward to, you were just part of the team. Was that in the end a positive experience because you were able to kind of treat it as a learning experience rather than a competition?
Yeah, I was still, technically I was still 1-0 in MMA, so I wasn't too upset about it. And I, for the first time, I had been training with UFC fighters, with Invicta fighters, with people who I was kind of fangirling over. I'm training with them now. So it was really cool. And for the first time, I was training with women who were as skilled or better than me. And it's a huge difference. Like, when you're training with a guy, like, it's easy to make excuses when you're not doing well. Like, oh, he's stronger than me, or, he's like muscling through everything, or if that was a chick, that move would have worked. But if you do something to a girl who's in your weight class, who's, you know, who you could potentially fight, and it doesn't work, you're like, okay, it's not because she's stronger or bigger or faster. It's because I'm not doing the technique right. So it's a really good way to check yourself, but it's also a good way to see what actually does work. So when I'm like suddenly like taking people down and stuff, when it was really hard to take down the guys at my other gym where they're all really good wrestlers, then I'm like, oh, okay. So the stuff that I was doing is working. I just have to keep getting those reps in with girls who are good that are going to challenge me. And I think that's one thing that's led to a lot of great female fights is the fact that these girls are suddenly like finding each other and training together. Like you have like the girls at Top Team, you have a lot of girls in Colorado who are all training together too. And then we have a big group out here in San Diego, and like guys, they don't understand how lucky they have it. Like it's such a big difference to train with a bunch of girls who are good. And I like to use the example of like, imagine a flyweight fighter only having like light heavyweights to train with. Like they're never going to get the right looks. They're never going to understand what they're good at and what they're bad at. And then you end up kind of going into the fight blind. And with being able to train with a lot of women, I feel like it's really allowed me to develop a lot faster than I would have if I was just training with guys the entire time.
You spoke so much there about the kind of developing the sort of physical side of your skill set. Just looking at sort of the more recent years of, you know, and seeing you fighting at such a high level, I'm just interested in what your approach is to, you know, to camp and to fights, and leading up to, you know, the last part of this question would be, you know, what you do at that last minute before you get the call and then you walk out. Like, what's your routine, and what do you do to prepare yourself mentally for these sorts of things?
Just for that last moment or the whole, like...
I guess, yeah. I mean, if we could just focus, I suppose, mainly on, like, you know, the day of the fight.
The day of the fight. The day of the fight, it's a tricky one. I've had a couple of days of the fights that didn't... that started off, I had a fight, and then no more. So, so I've been in that situation a lot this year. But I think the day of the fight, you wake up, hopefully you have a good night's rest. Usually the weight cut, you don't really sleep. So you probably pass out at like 8 p.m., wake up pretty early, and then you feel like nice and refreshed, ready to go. I like to do a shakeout, which is just like a little workout right in the morning before the nerves start building up, because for me, like a lot of times I can't eat breakfast if I'm too nervous. I can't just like relax, because I'll keep getting those butterflies, like those heart pings, like you're on a roller coaster. So if I work out real quick, just a quick little like reminder that I'm strong, I'm ready, I'm fast, my body's recovered from the weight cut, because you feel like shit when you cut weight. You're just, everything you do, you're like, So it's good to have that reminder, hey, we're back, we got water in our body, and we can hit hard again, we can sprawl hard, we're grappling really good and fast. So we do a quick workout, like maybe a 30-minute workout in the morning, and then my nerves are settled for pretty much until we leave to the arena. So I can eat, I can relax, I can hang out with my team. I might watch some highlights of my opponent's fight, or I might watch some highlights of a fighter that I really admire, and just be like, okay, I'm gonna do that. I'm gonna do that to that person when I get there. And then on the way to the arena, I'll have my little playlist that I play, like my little hype playlist to keep me like, you know, amped and feeling good and feeling confident. And then when we get there, it's kind of a blur. So you get.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
There, you probably have to do like a drug test or something. You have to pee in a cup, and then they rush you into your dressing room. You get your hands wrapped, and that's for me. That's like that moment where I know, okay, it's about to go down. When I'm sitting in the chair, getting my hands wrapped, trying to stay relaxed, but also knowing, okay, here we go. It's about to be that time that I've been waiting for all these weeks, and I think the most intense workout of the entire fight camp is the one right before you go out. So they usually don't show it when they show like the camera of you like hitting pads. Usually you don't want to show them too much because they put it on the screen right before you walk out. But when the cameras go away, you're like hitting mean, rah, 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 like, you know, making them hear it. Like in Muay Thai, there used to just be a curtain between you and your opponent. So my coach would always be like, all right, let him hear it. And then I got just like screaming with every kick, like making sure my kicks sound really loud. So they're like, oh no, she's going to try to do that to me. But yeah, the same energy goes, even though we're really far away and they can't hear me, I'm still doing that. I'm still like, you know, building my confidence by just like hitting as hard as I can, imagining punching through their skull, you know. And then when you walk out, it's just that constant constant affirmations, like telling yourself, all right, let's go, time to run this girl over, time to fuck this bitch up, you know, like it's my time, just, you know, just like anything to get yourself riled up. So yeah, it's like constantly just willing yourself to get in there and just be a monster. And that's me, the walk out to the cage.
And at that point, when you're walking out to the cage, how different is it and how much of an effect does it have on that moment when there's a crowd there and when there's not?
You know, I don't really feel the difference. And I feel like when I fight again with a crowd, I might change my mind.
Yeah.
But because it was so long ago, I really don't feel that much of a difference walking out. But it does do something.
Yeah.
Like I think my last crowd fight was in New Zealand on the Paul Felder Hooker fight.
Yeah.
And they, because it never comes to New Zealand, they were their first fight of the card. So I think I was like maybe the second or third fight and the crowd was full. Like everyone was there. Everyone was like cheering and everything. So it was pretty cool walking out and seeing all those people and they knew my name. They're like screaming, Angela, look at me. You know, so it is pretty cool. But personally, I feel like all that's a distraction. Like I really just want to focus on walking out and telling myself, okay, time to fuck this girl up, you know, just staying focused on the task at hand and not getting too starry-eyed at like, oh, they love me, you know. So yeah, I feel like that's maybe the biggest difference. But what I do hate is after the fight, when you walk out, it's always really cool to finally like see the fans and slap their hands and everything. And they're always like, I love you. No matter what happened in the fight, win, lose or whatever. Like, they're just like, yeah, I love you. great fight. Oh my God. So so that part is probably the part I miss about having fans in a crowd. That, and when you land something cool, they all go, oh. Yeah. Yes. So those are the things that I miss. But yeah, the crowd can be kind of obnoxious too. So So it's like, you know, you get your good and your bad with it, but yeah, it is fun. When I heard, when I was watching the fights recently, I think it was the Florida fights, and like the very first fight, it was like a strawweight fight, and like people were there. It was just like New Zealand, like, you know, everyone was there because it was the first fight with a crowd and forever. And like just hearing the crowd go, oh my God, like that made me miss having a crowd in there. So I feel like when I fight again with a crowd, I'll be like, yeah, this is the real shit. Like,
I can't remember who that fight was. That first fight back on the prelims when there was a crowd, them boys that were fighting were throwing. As soon as that crowd roared, tell it was like a big injection. That it was like, whoa, I've not heard this for a long time. And it seemed to just absolutely lift the fight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. It was like adding sparkles to your TikTok or something. It just like makes it prettier. It makes it more cool.
We'll have people listening to this podcast that aren't fighters, but I think can, you know, take a lot of inspiration from stories of fighters, like overcoming adversity and stuff like that. And I think from looking at your career chronologically from after The Ultimate Fighter, you won your UFC debut, mm-hmm. then unfortunately lost two fights and then were cut from the UFC. Mm-hmm. And that must have been a really low moment. But then from that, you were able to pick yourself back up, win four fights in Invicta, including a world title, and find your way back to the UFC. And I think there's loads of people out there, when they hear stories like that, are really inspired by that. How did you do that? How do you go? Because I'm assuming that must have been pretty shit, quite frankly, to be cut. And then, but then to go, no, I'm going to do this. Mm-hmm. Go on that win streak, beat four women and win a world title as well. How do you kind of get that shift in mentally, you know, to be able to propel yourself forward?
I don't know. I think I just put so much effort into it at that point. And I think being on The Ultimate Fighter, it was a good moment where I just knew, okay, you're doing the right things. You're in the right spot right now. And if you were getting your ass kicked every day and then you lost two fights in a row, then yeah, maybe this isn't for you. But because I was doing so well in the gym, because I knew my potential, and, you know, I had really good people behind me. My husband was coaching me at the time. And then I also had just moved out to San Diego to work with some new coaches. And everyone was telling me, hey, like, you'll get right back in there. You just need a few more wins. They understood that when you got into the UFC, you only had one fight. So aside from my Muay Thai career, I only had one MMA fight. And it was just a learning curve. Like, I had two people who were very experienced that I lost to, Tisha Torres and Rose Namajunas. And like, once I got cut, I was like, all I have to do is prove to them that I belong in there. So that's what I did. I proved to them that I belonged in there. My first fight in Invicta, that back when I was still looking at what people were saying about me, everyone assumed that I was going to get submitted, that I was going to get knocked out for some reason. People just assumed the worst. They just thought I was shit. And to be able to go into my first fight in Invicta and get a knockout win so quickly, I was just like, yeah, your fucking faces. Like, it was just like, it was just such a great feeling. And eventually I stopped looking at what people are saying about me online. Like, I was actually looking for it. I'm like, Googling Angela Hill MMA, latest search. And I would like look for what people were saying about me. So it was a really good feeling to just like reaffirm like all these things that I already knew about myself. Like, I already knew I belonged there. I already knew that I could knock people out, but it was just a matter of doing it. So having that first fight in Invicta and knocking the girl out and just like really, really proving to myself, like, yeah, you're on the right path. You just got to keep striving, keep working on everything. And you'll be there. That was a big step towards me getting back into the UFC and just believing that I could too, because a lot of fighting is confidence. You can be like the worst fighter ever. You go in against the best fighter with tons of confidence and the best fighter has zero confidence. The guy with confidence is going to win because there's all this posturing. You have to like throw the hit. You can't just like second guess yourself in there. And I feel like a lot of my losses were because I was a little too cautious, because I was second guessing myself or thinking or worried about what happened in the past happening again. And that ended up allowing the thing to happen that I didn't want to happen, if that makes sense. So yeah, just learning how to trust in myself and trust in my training, trust in what the people around me are telling me, like the good things, and being able to just bring that into the cage with me. So that those are probably the big moments, like getting that knockout win and just knowing, you know, back on tough, I was beating these girls. I was hanging with these girls. So I know with just a little more experience, I'll be beating the girls that I'm actually fighting.
What's your relationship like with social media now, Angela? Because we live in a world where, you know, in MMA, obviously in the UK, we're seeing, you know, what one of our, you know, more, I guess, popular fighters, Darren Till, constantly just throwing everything in the kitchen sink at his social media, calling out anyone that, you know, he doesn't like that day. And you know, and we've seen, you know, masters like Conor using it to build the profile on that. Is it something that you use at all to build the, aside from Angela Hill, the fighter, the brand, the marketing angle of things? Is it something, what's your relationship with it now? You touched upon some trolls and stuff like that earlier, but, you know, I just wonder how you approach the whole social media thing now.
I've been grinding on social media, but I try to get it out there, but every now and then I'll look at my husband and I'll just go, I need to post a booty pic. I'm sorry. They don't care about anything else. So yeah, I kind of have a love-hate relationship with social media, but I do think it's a really unique tool that we can use as fighters to just stay in people's minds and build your brand and all that good stuff. So it is a useful tool. I'm just still figuring out the algorithms, but I like it.
One of the best things I think I've seen on MMA social media in general really was, and I wasn't going to bring this idiot up, but you dealt with it so well. For people that don't know, Stephen A. Smith is an annoying man on ESPN that unfortunately came out of a statement along the lines of, I don't like seeing women punch each other in the face, mm-hmm. and in a way kind of denigrating the female mixed martial arts. And a lot of female mixed martial artists came back at him, rightfully so. But you did it in the best way, because he somehow, there was like a leaked him hitting pads, which was horrendous, because he threw like some kind of left hook to the hip and then a terrible uppercut constantly. And you and I think your husband, Adam, is that right? You put together a parody of that video that was so funny. And I recommend anyone going out there and listening to this interview now, go on your, I think it was on your Twitter, it might have been on your Instagram as well.
Yeah,
I'm not
sure, I posted it on everything.
I mean, you can find it. It's so, so good and so funny, the way that like you were like, oh, but this technique hurts. And your husband was like, if it's hurting, do it more. It was just really, really funny. It's so annoying that narrative for some idiots is still out there. Mm-hmm. And even though you do exactly the same sport, exactly the same amount of rounds as well, it's not like, some people have an issue with tennis and how like women will do 3 sets, but the men will do 5. Mm-hmm. You can't say that about MMA. Championship fights and main events are 5 rounds. It doesn't matter on your gender. Other fights are 3 rounds. Doesn't matter on your gender. You're doing exactly the same sport, and there's still some idiots out there. I mean, As I say, you dealt with it incredibly well, but it must annoy you to a ridiculous degree.
It annoys me because he is in such an elevated position.
Yes.
So him saying that is allowing people who thought it wasn't cool to say but wanted to say it, it's allowing them to say it now. And it just really annoys me. And you know, if that's how you feel, then that's how you feel, whatever, but like, you can just not watch it.
Yeah.
You know, like, you don't have to go and tell female fighters that their profession makes you uncomfortable. And like, what other profession can you do that in? You know, like, what other profession gets attacked as much as like female athletes, where you're saying, I don't think it's right that you're doing that. Especially fighters. I think people are more okay with women like hitting balls than like actually like punching each other in the face or getting hurt. Anything where a woman can like get her face messed up, they're like, oh no. Yeah. That's the only thing she's good for, is looking good, you know? So yeah, it's definitely a backwards way of thinking, or just like an old school way of thinking. Yeah. And I have family who thinks that way. I have like old uncles who think that way. Like, it's not like I'm surprised by it. It's just that I don't want to hear that on something like ESPN, where they're working so hard to bring equality to the sport and just elevate like female voices and, you know, treat us like we should be treated. So yeah, I think that was the main reason I was like, all right, we gotta make fun of this guy. Because,
oh, absolutely. Yeah. And that comment was made, I think, only just after the Joanna Jacek Zhang Wei Li fight, which was fight of the year.
Exactly.
So
exactly.
Like, what are you talking about, mate?
Yeah.
It's absolutely ridiculous.
It's like, you can't get past the fact that it's two women in there. Like, he's just so focused on that, he can't see the brilliance of the fight or any other female fight that has happened that just shows like an abundance of skill and technique and just perseverance and toughness. Like, he just doesn't see any of that. But he's made like dumb comments about other people's fights, like male fighters' fights, and he's just been consistent with that. You know, that's his brand. I'm gonna say some dumb shit and everyone's gonna get mad about it, you know? So good thing, and he's the one that posted that video.
Is he? Oh my
so God. That's the best part. He was proud of it. Oh he was God. Proud of it. It's like my old, my first fight. Like, oh, I'm so proud of this thing. And then you look back at it, you're like, probably shouldn't have posted that. Yeah, so yeah, he did that to himself.
Well, along those types of lines, when we've had female fighters on the podcast, we like to try and highlight the kind of additional hurdles that they have to overcome that the male fans may not even be aware of. Because, you know, MMA still feels like it still feels very male heavy in terms of its fan base. Mm-hmm. And so when we spoke to Molly McCann and Joanne Calderwood as well. And Joanne touched on something you mentioned earlier about the difficulty of finding female training partners and always having to spar with men until she moved over to Syndicate MMA. And Molly McCann actually spoke about periods and how that's not something that people consider in terms of, like, when she gets a fight booked, she's checking the calendar immediately because she's someone that can be sick. It can affect the weight cuts. She also said a statistic of like, you're 80% more likely to be injured on the first day of your period than at any other point during a training camp, which, you know, you're doing a 10-week camp, that's three of those weeks.
Yeah.
That's a lot. And the male fighters will never have to deal with that. And the male fans will probably never even consider it. So are there any hurdles other than those, or do you just agree with those that male fans are probably not aware of, that you go, well, female fighters also have to contend with this on top of it? Maybe it's just idiots like Stephen A. Smith. I don't know.
Well, a lot of MMA fans are single too. They don't have girlfriends. So I feel like that would be good insight to some of the stuff we deal with, like the period thing and everything. I think another thing that we have to deal with is just like looking good all the time.
Yes.
I think the male fighters don't really have to worry about that. But there's a lot of like one thing I really respect Rose Namajunas for is, she cut her hair off because she was sick of that pressure. you know, she was sick of like people just going, oh, like, oh, she's so gorgeous, blah, blah, blah. And she's like, you know what? I'm gonna cut my hair off because it's in my way in training and this is what I'm focused on. And to this day, people like if anyone posts a old photo of Rose, they're like, oh my God, Rose with hair. And it's just like, dude, like just like respect the fact that she doesn't want hair right now. Yeah. Like it's getting in her way. She doesn't want that shit. And there is a lot of pressure for female fighters to look a certain way, to post booty pics, to like get people excited about just the way that they look on top of the way that they fight. So I think that's like something that, you know, I'm not like one of those people who are like, girls should never post booty pics. But I do understand, like, it's hard for the girls who don't want to do that.
Yeah.
You know, like the girls who want the attention, they want people to get excited about fighting them. They want promoters to see them, but they don't want to like bend over and take a photo on Instagram. Like I feel for those girls. I know a lot, I train with a lot of them. I also train with a lot of them who don't mind, you know, like yeah. Half of my friends have OnlyFans accounts. So it's like, yeah, it's just different. You know, it's something that, you know, male fans and male fighters don't necessarily have to go through or consider. And like the period thing, I've heard about that too. I always wear extra knee pads when that time comes around, just cause like, I think it has something to do with like your ligaments.
Wow.
I forget the actual thing that it is. I should read an article about it or something, but like it's easier to get like knee injuries and stuff.
Really?
When that first day of your period. So I remember someone was talking about a study where like the soccer teams or football teams.
Football, yes, as correct. You guys football, call that it. Is how yeah, you call it.
The female football teams, they'll actually take that week off because they all sync up. Like that's the other thing. Like all the girls sync up when they're spending so much time together, and they'll take that week off and just like focus on rehab so that they don't all get knee injuries, like cutting angles and stuff. So I definitely think that's a thing. And yeah, the training partner thing, that's why I moved out to San Diego. After being on Tough, I was like, man, I need some more female training partners because these girls are a lot tougher than I thought. You know, like they're strong, they're fast, they know a lot on the ground. So I went to a few different places to check out the gyms and ended up landing in San Diego. And I just, I had a bunch of teammates, a bunch of female teammates, a bunch of nice weather. So it was an easy decision for me, but it makes a huge difference. Like it really does.
Yeah.
It allows you to be confident, but not overly confident. Like it's so disheartening when you learn a new move and then you try it on like the biggest guy in the gym and they just like, you know, they just like face smush you away. Like you're like trying to beat up your big brother or something. So when you have someone your size to pick on, then it allows you to really just open up and realize how much cool stuff you can actually do in there. So yeah, that's a big, big help for me is having so many women to train with out here. And I'm trying to think what else could there be. I don't have to go through it because I was married before I started doing MMA, but finding a boyfriend is so hard, or just like just a date seems so hard for like just like women who can beat guys up. Like like could you imagine, like I don't know, unless that's like your kink or whatever, it's so hard. Like I'm always listening to my friends like dating stories, and then eventually like the guy will do something that just sounds like they're intimidated by him, or yeah, or they're scared to speak their mind, or I don't know. It just seems hard. And then like at the same time, you don't really want to date someone that you can beat up either. Like you want to date someone that like can protect you and can make you feel small and cute. So so yeah, I feel like it's really hard for female fighters to just find their guy, find a guy to go on a date with, or even like get in a long-term relationship with. So yeah, I kind of lucked out.
Yeah, majority of the time you do seem to see female fighters with a coach or another fighter or something like that. Maybe we wouldn't be aware of the female fighters that are dating an accountant, but you know, you are very aware of the ones that are dating coaches and fighters, because obviously they're all mixing and they're in the corner and all that kind of stuff. But one of the other pressures that you personally have to deal with more so than others is that you are the first, correct me if I'm wrong, African-American female fighter in the UFC.
Yeah.
And
tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Can you take inspiration and motivation from that? Or, you know, because you didn't ask to be the first African-American female fighter, this is something that's just happened to you. And so is it a case of being able to take motivation from it? Or is there sometimes an unwanted pressure on it? And are you kind of almost sometimes going, I wish people would just go, look, I'm just an American female fighter. The other thing's not as important as just me, Angela Hill, the fighter.
Yeah. It like depends on the day that you ask me to be honest. Because I do get just criticism for some reason, for saying I'm black. Like,
really?
Like they're like, we know. And it's like, okay, well, it's just a weird thing right now. Like, America is very tense at the moment. Mm. And I feel like 5 years ago, it would be more celebrated. Like, hey, first African-American woman in the UFC, that's a big deal. I feel like now, after Trump era, after like all this division that's happened in the country, after all the after Black Lives Matter became like more taboo than like a good thing, it's just like been very tense out here. And and the fact that I support Black Lives Matter, the fact that I am very left wing, people are just like, like MMA is very 50-50, if not 60-40, leaning towards the right. So So I do get a lot of slack if I ever do anything. If there's ever like a headline saying Angela Hill, first African-American blah, this is just like, just trolls going at it in the comments. They don't care what it is. It's just like, bah, we know already. Quit talking about it. She thinks that you know, the only reason she loses is because the UFC is racist. And it's stuff that I've never said, but this is like the thing that I keep seeing where I'm constantly blocking people. This is like the reason that comes up most often is because people think that I use my blackness as a reason to feel like a victim. And it's really unfair. And like, I think that's the only reason some days I'm just like, man, I really wish I didn't have to worry about seeing this kind of opinion about me. And anytime someone does a piece on me about that, about being like the first African-American woman in the UFC. But I do think it's like a cool accomplishment. I do think the best part about it is that it just like provides that the diversity for other girls who are watching the UFC and they're like, why isn't there anyone in there that looks like me? And like, I had that question when I started Muay Thai. I'm like, why aren't there any women that look like me doing Muay Thai? Like, this is a cool thing. I feel like, I feel like there should be. And I did come across Miriam Nakamoto, who's just like this really awesome Muay Thai fighter. She's like half black, half Japanese or something. And she was just kicking ass in Muay Thai. And I'm like, oh, okay, that's cool. That's cool. It's cool to see someone else doing like this thing that I'm so passionate about. And like a lot of times you get people who like they get passionate about something, but just because they feel like this isn't a space where they'd be welcomed, they shy away from it. So like same thing with animation. I was like, man, I feel like there is like no black animators out there. And then I found a couple and I was just like, okay, this is cool. Like, okay, this is something that, you know, it gives you just that little bit of extra motivation to try to do something that's a little out of the norm. So, I think it is important to be there. I'm happy to carry the torch, you know, and be a pioneer in that sense. And, you know, anytime I start feeling bombarded by the trolls and by the people who are uncomfortable about people acknowledging that, I'll get a message from someone saying, oh, my daughter looks up to you. Oh, like I was afraid to join a gym. And then I saw you and I was inspired. And these are like women from all different backgrounds, guys, you know, like it's just like people see me doing something that's kind of weird. And they're like, okay, I can do it too. Like I wanted to. I see this person doing it, you know, despite like not really seeing anyone else doing it and thriving, and yeah, I'm gonna try it out too. We'll see what happens. So I'm happy that I can be that person to like give them the nudge, that extra nudge to try something, because like the second I started doing Muay Thai, my life improved. You know, even if I had stayed an animator, my life would have been so much better just because I was being active, because I was becoming more confident and just like being comfortable in my own skin, learning how to move, like all that stuff is just like, it just raises your quality of life. So if I can inspire anyone to do that, then I'm happy.
Wonderful. Angela, I guess, you know, we're mindful of time with you. And so just before we sort of start to wrap things up, obviously we need to talk about right here and now. And so obviously on May the 8th, you was meant to have fought Amanda. Didn't happen on the day. And it's rescheduled now, obviously, for June the 5th, is it?
It was rescheduled. But...
Oh.
I just was talking to my manager, and then apparently like she couldn't fight on June 5th because she was still having COVID symptoms that were preventing her to fight. So the fight ended up getting nixed. But then 2 days later, I saw a post where she's dancing and saying she's COVID free. So I'm like, what are you doing? We just canceled the fight because he asked. I'm not sure what's gonna happen with that. Like maybe we'll get rescheduled one day, but I don't think it's gonna happen anytime soon. And I'm hoping she doesn't book a fight against someone else, because then I'd be really pissed. But for now, I'm just training. I don't have a fight at the moment.
That must be so frustrating.
Yeah.
I can't even imagine. As you say, it's postponed once. You feel like it's going to happen very soon. And then it gets postponed again. I mean, obviously the COVID situation is crazy and everyone needs all their time to recover. We've seen a bunch of incidents with Shemaev and Leon Edwards and a few others that, you know, it needs to be taken very, very seriously, even for elite athletes. I mean, we've spoken to Alexander Volkanovsky recently and he had a terrible time and ended up in hospital for a little while with it. But especially if you're then seeing them having a little dance, COVID free. I can't imagine how frustrating that must be.
I'm like, you better lay down.
Have your posts lying down at least for just, you know, have some, you know.
She could do one of those things where you take the, the iPhone thing and tape it to your, tape it to your body, stick one earpad up your nose or something, like pretend to be hurt still, like just for me, because I'm really frustrated right now. No, it's crazy. And you know, it happened to me earlier this year with the Ashley Yoder fight. Ugh. And the difference was hers was a false positive and it wasn't her, it was her cornerman, so she just came back with a different corner. But then this time it was like Rebus and her dad, who corners her, both got COVID, and apparently she was having trouble walking, having like, she was just like really bad. And, like, I get it. Like I got it, when I was scheduled to fight Tisha, and that's why that fight didn't happen. I was supposed to fight her in December and I got it the week before I flew out and I was so upset. And you do get pretty sick from it, but I recovered pretty fast, luckily. It was just like maybe three bad days where I couldn't really do much of anything. But then afterwards I recovered. I didn't feel any weariness in my lungs or anything. That's like one of the scariest parts of it for an athlete, is that your lungs get messed up. You can almost maybe never recover fully from it. I was happy that I was good when it came to that. We'll see what happens. Like I was mad that I saw that post 2 days after the fight was officially canceled. So I just sent the video to the matchmaker. Oh, I was man. Like, what the fuck? who knows what she's still going through. So we'll see what happens with that.
So where does that leave you then? Because you're obviously in peak fitness, right?
Yeah.
Oh man. Yeah. Twiddling your thumbs in peak fitness.
Yeah, it's frustrating. But one thing I was looking forward to, like taking a reset after the fight. And when the fight got postponed, then I was just thinking, okay, I just need to train a few more weeks, just 4 more weeks, and then I could take my reset. So when the fight got pushed back again, I was a little relieved. I was just like, you know what? I need to take a break. I need to rest my knees. I had too many periods, no rest days, you know? So I just need to take a break and just let my body heal a little bit, because everything about MMA is just mashing your body up, you know, like going for takedowns, punching each other, getting hit, landing on the ground in a weird position, grappling next to people who might run into you. Like there's so many ways to get hurt in fight camp. So that's kind of why I enjoy my short notice fights, because I'm training a little more smart. Like if I feel messed up, I won't go in. But if I'm in fight camp, I'm doing every session possible. I'm running, I'm going in, even when I feel sick or injured. I'm trying to train around injuries. And I don't feel like it's the smartest way to train. But at the same time, if you know you're fighting in 8 weeks and someone else is getting ready to fight you in 8 weeks, you're training your ass off, because you don't want them to be the one that's more prepared. So I like having the short notice fights, because that little voice in my head going, go to training. I don't care. I don't care if your knees hurt, go to training. That voice is, you know, it goes away and I can just train when I feel good. And I end up learning more outside of camp too, because I'm not focused on one person. I'm just training to get better. And yeah, I'll learn tricks that I never would have learned if I was only preparing for Rebus for like 2 months. I'm working on other stuff to help my all around game. So yeah, it was kind of a relief just because I could like take a step back. I could have a drink. I can just relax and you know, just garden and play with my dog for a little bit. And then hopefully when I get back in there and I'm getting my sprints back going, I'll be able to snatch up another fight or a short notice or an actual fight camp or whatever. And I'll be fresh and mentally fresh and physically fresh and ready to go.
Oh, brilliant. We can't wait to watch you. Whenever that is, we'll be cheering you on, Angela. You've been absolutely delightful. Thank you so much for giving up your time to talk to us today.
Thank
it's been
you,
an absolute joy.
Yes,
thank you.
Fun.
And all the best to Adam and the dog as well.
Yeah. I'll give them your regards.
Oh, lovely. Thanks loads, Angela.
All right. Take care, guys.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye.
Well, there you go. Angela Overkill Hill. What a phenomenal guest.
Mate, brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. It was one of the ones where I just thought, oh, I know that we both had more questions to ask, but I mean, I think like she just seemed really cool and up for chatting, but it was like, let's not take the piss. We've been going for an hour. Let's quit while we're on top, because this was a really lovely chat. And honestly, we just hope that you've got a fraction of the joy listening to that as we did having it, because Angela was absolutely delightful.
Yeah, what an interesting person as well. The fact that she's like, oh, I was an animator working at an animation studio and my husband worked in an art gallery, and then we just decided to do a Muay Thai class, and then all of a sudden she's... few years later, she's fighting in the UFC. You know, she's in the cage opposite Rose Namajunas and fighting Carla Esparza on Tough. I mean, these are two women. Obviously, Rose is the current champion, and Carla Esparza's recently won what a lot of people thought was a number one contender fight. Mm. And those two are probably fighting for the belt next. Then Angela's fought both of them. Mm. But really, really phenomenal story. Such a cool and interesting person. And she seems to have dealt with a lot of the stresses and pressures of that sport, both physically and mentally, with such class,
yeah.
You know, and dealt with it incredibly well, dealing with the disappointments of being cut from the UFC and just going, no, I am good enough, and showing that mental strength and coming back, winning the Invicta title, then going back to the UFC and getting wins under her belt. Also, that the pressures of being the first African-American female in the UFC, and the pressures that comes to her. And she said that, you know, she's not always wanting that pressure, and it comes with idiot trolls on Twitter trying to project what they think she's feeling about, like, we didn't even get onto the fact that she has had a bunch of split decision losses recently, two of which I can think of very recently are against Claudia Gadelha and Michelle Watson. You can make very strong arguments that Angela won those fights.
Absolutely.
Particularly the Claudia Gadelha one, I think. But both of them, you can make arguments that Angela won those fights. And had she won those fights, she'd be on like a 6-fight win streak right now. And she'd probably be looking at potential title contention. It just shows you the fine margins in MMA. And sometimes it's not even you, but the judges and how the judges are scoring the fights differently to most other people. But, you know, she's talking about people that are projecting this idea that she's saying that, you know, the reason she didn't get the win is because she's black, or that the judges are racist. And she's never even ever said that.
Yeah.
So that just shows you the difficulties that some people have to go through in this world. And it's a real, real shame. But she seems to deal with it with a real smile on her face and class and intelligence. And yeah, just what a wonderful person.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, before we wrap things up, just finally, if you see us on the social media, give us a like, love, a share and a retweet. We're on Insta, Facebook, Twitter. If you've got fighters that you'd like to hear us chat to, then drop us a message. Let us know what your dream fights would be, and yeah, drop us a message, because we're on the socials, and we're trying to sort of build our little podcast community, and having people like Angela Hill on can only help that. And it's been an absolute joy to be able to sit and have that conversation that you've just listened to, and we really hope that you're enjoying this podcast. We're back next time, right?
We are. Thanks very much for listening, guys.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Time to fuck this bitch up.